Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Community Geek Podcast. This is Greg Russo, your host, here today with a special guest. All the Fever Bee staff is either too busy to come help me, or on holiday, or taking care of stuff for our sprint event, which is coming up in a few months. So I am here with a very special member of the Community Geek community. This is a first for the show. We've actually got a community member on the show. And I would like to introduce to you, Christy Federa.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me on, Greg.
My pleasure. Now, some listeners, particularly in the London area, will be familiar with Christy because she runs the meetup group there. And very successful events. What is it, every month?
We try and do it about every 2 months. We'd like to do more.
I wish we had a similar thing over here in Philadelphia. But I don't know that we have enough community managers around to make that happen. But I've had my former partner, Mike, he went to one of your events. He said it was fantastic, and everyone was great and very welcoming.
Good.
So, Christy, why don't you tell us a bit about how you got into communities, how you got involved in this London meetup, and maybe talk about some of the companies and communities you've worked with.
Sure. So I have been in the IT industry for longer than I can count. And as any person who's been in the IT industry for more than about 5 years can tell you, you do tend to have career opportunities throughout the industry. So you do tend to move around. I started out as a technical writer, writing documentation for computer systems years and years ago. And I did that until about 2001 when I had the opportunity to move to London. And when I came over, I was brought over specifically for a very niche sort of knowledge that I had about our software application. And I was taken out of the technical writing position and put instead into a product management and product marketing kind of position. So I kind of made that leap, and it was a big leap, and it was a challenging one, but basically it just meant that I was representing the product, which weirdly, as a technical writer, is kind of what you do anyway, with your fingers on the paper. So I spent a lot of time talking about product and representing product and then marketing it and then bringing, you know, feature requests back in from community and from customers. And that's really when I started interacting with this idea of community, but we didn't really use that word in the early aughts. You know, it was all about customers and customer relationships and hopefully some case studies and customer reference programs. Those were kind of the three bits of the tier of how you interacted with customers. And I spent quite a few years doing that. And although I am a closet geek, I do love my technology, I realized that I actually like the people more than I really like the product. I love technology and I love getting into the heart of it, but I really enjoy talking to people who use the product because I think fundamentally, and this is a very naive kind of thing to say and to believe, but I feel fundamentally that software should change people's lives for the better. You know, whenever you have a piece of software, an app or a technology, it should change the way that you do your business and the way that you interact on a daily basis with your job. So when I had a redundancy a few years ago, I got hired by Adobe to come in and be their marketing manager for some software that they were marketing across Europe, Middle East, and Africa. And that was really incredible because I had to cultivate and build my own community of customers around Europe, Middle East, and Africa because we didn't have that particular community. And I realized that it was such a great opportunity because it taught me a lot about interacting with people and about learning what they need. And it taught me so much about listening. You have to listen to people. And although my job was marketing, I actually really thrived on the other side of it. So when the opportunity for a community management role came up at Adobe, I flung myself at it and begged them to hire me and to give me a chance to do it. And I'm so glad that they did. And I learned so much over the past couple of years working with them because although we had an existing community here in Europe, Middle East, and Africa, there were some challenges with it. There was some negativity. And basically, it was important to turn around the community sentiment.
What was the nature of the negativity?
There were a few things. Perhaps you heard about the Flash thing. So many of our community leaders were experts in Flash technology, and they kind of felt like they were being abandoned. And obviously, they were using Flash as their livelihood. You know, it was the tool that they used to market themselves to their customers. So that was quite challenging for them. So what were Adobe's positions on that? What were their messages? What were they thinking? Why were they doing that? And not having a local person on the ground to comfort them or assuage them or give them those reasons and those understandings was a really big problem. Additionally, Adobe was at the same time reaching out and trying to find other communities that would be interested in their technology because they were constantly adding to their stable of technology. So the barn was increasing and the products that we had were increasing, but we didn't know how to reach out to those people. So it was up to me to not only talk and meet with and understand and connect with our existing community, but also to find and build and grow new community. And that was a lot of job for one person.
Yeah, sounds like it.
But I spent 1 year doing nothing but talking to our existing community leaders and you know, really working with them and understanding their pain. And also just having that single point of contact for them to the organization. In my role, I'm reporting to California, so I have the California messages. I'm not localizing them through a local field of marketing office. I'm localizing them to that person, to that individual. You know, I'm not beating a drum. I'm talking and listening to that individual.
I think that's something a lot of companies underestimate, having that single point of contact. The ability to, and we have a person in Community Geek, Kurt, who basically has a whole company that's sort of devoted to this concept, but having a specific person that you can reach out to in an organization, it's so empowering because, I mean, yeah, sure, you could go through a support ticket or something like that, but it's very impersonal. You don't feel like there's a sustained relationship that this person really understands you. Sometimes it can be frustrating. You don't get a response in the time that you need or in the detail that you need. And if you actually have someone whose dedicated role is, I'm here to talk to you about this product and I'm talking to your equivalent in all these other companies, you can direct them a little bit and say, oh, you're also having this issue that these other people are having. You're not alone here. Here are some ways that we've been talking about how to fix that issue. Do any of these sound like they might work for you? Or let's bring you into this conversation I'm having with this other person who's in a similar company, maybe in Africa, and you're in Europe, and we'll see
Yes.
if we can, you know, come together on a solution there. That's so powerful and so hard to like necessarily draw on, but it's a fundamental psychological thing for people. They really love this personal connection.
They do, and it's you know, it's quite interesting because I think that people, like you say, underestimate the importance of having that connection, a person that you know, person that you've talked to. You know, I know all of our Adobe European, Middle Eastern, African community leaders. I've spoken to all of them. I know them all. I know their dogs' names. I know whose mother got sick. I know whose daughter got married. And I know who loves to do a particular task and who really hates doing a particular task. For example, you know, California was sending out some requests to one of our community leaders here in the UK and asking her to do certain activities. And I was able to inform them, look, you know, this person has a health issue and they can't leave their house. She's happy to do anything we'd like her to do from her home, but we need to stop asking her to do things outside the home. And that's not something that she would have been happy sharing to a person she doesn't know in California.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, it was a fantastic opportunity. I got to know them all really well. And also, I think it's important, Greg, not to underestimate the importance of connecting them, that networking. You know, like you gave the example of connecting a person in France to a person in Africa or what have you. And they love that, right? A lot of our community leaders are single shop, you know, single man business owners. And they're looking for constant connectivity out into the world to not only increase their own perhaps pipeline or revenue, but also because they're, sometimes they're working all by themselves. They need to increase their own knowledge level, their own knowledge base, and they like to share. They like to tell other people what they're doing. So having someone like me being able to know, oh, well, you know, that we have a guy in Belgium who's doing this fantastic project, and I know that there's a guy in Egypt who would love to know about that. And I can connect those two. And it just enhances everybody's experience, basically.
Yeah, and it brings the entire community closer together because you're not just relying on existing connections, you're helping forge new ones. And sometimes those can be pretty meaningful. Like, for instance, when I joined Community Geek, I've started doing a process of interviewing people one-on-one, our member spotlights. And I absolutely love the member spotlights. Like, without exaggeration, I like it more than doing the podcast. It is so much fun. I get to talk to them. I usually have like a pre-interview for 15, 20 minutes where we talk about anything that's not community management. What are their families doing? What do they like doing in their free time? And the commonalities that you find are just fantastic. And I still keep up with all of them. Send them emails, Skype messages. Me and Jürgen Durlath, we talk all the time. He's such a cool dude, man. And I would never have met him if I didn't go through that process of you know, building those bridges. And to be able to do that for another, to be able to do that for someone like Jürgen that I'm already friends with and have him help make a meaningful connection that can help him not just professionally, but also maybe a friendship or someone to go visit when he's traveling.
Exactly.
I feel that's very rewarding.
Yeah. I think as human beings, we're constantly seeking connection and connectivity and other people. You know, we're a clan of herders. We like to herd together, you know, and I think that, you know, being able to reach out and meet new people and individuals is just absolutely one of the best things you can do.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a big fan of building your personal tribe. That's a little terminology borrowed from Seth Godin, but I think he's absolutely right about it.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, so you were working for Adobe, but recently that's changed. Do you want to go into that a little bit?
Sure. There's been a corporate decision that they would like to consolidate all community management back to California. And so, unfortunately, my role here with Adobe was made redundant. So I have left that organization and... Yeah, it's kind of a strange one because
hear that, hiring manager? She's single.
I reached out to Darren Goff, one of your esteemed colleagues, and we happen to live in the same village. So I bought him a coffee and I said, look, you know, this has happened, and I don't know of any examples that I can look at where a person like myself, a community manager who has spent 2 years growing, building, nurturing, empowering, activating and networking with community and then has left that community. I need an example, Darren. What have you got? I need to know what to do. And he said, well, we don't have any of those. Nobody like you has ever existed before. So, although, you know, he didn't have a specific example he could point me to, we kind of talked through some scenarios. I said, you know, look, how should I let my Twitter followers know? You know, I know that about 60% of my Twitter followers, and there's about 4,200 of those now, are Adobe customers or Adobe community leaders. So does this mean, for example, like I asked him all kinds of crazy questions. Like, does this mean, for example, that I'm going to lose 60% of my Twitter followers? And he said, Christy, you know, we're going to take each one of these scenarios at a time and try and work through them. But again, I can't give you any forecasting because no one has, like you, has ever been so tightly integrated in a community and then and had to leave that community. So, we're all going to be watching you with interest, he said.
Well, I mean, people have had to say goodbye to communities, but yeah, 2 years at such a high level. Yeah. That is relatively rare. I mean, you got to keep in mind how new the community space is in a lot of cases.
Exactly. It is an industry in its infancy, effectively. You know, I think 10 years ago, we would have easily called the role of community manager product manager, right? Because a product manager was working with the top level customers, and that's kind of who our community leaders are at Adobe. But basically, you know, all I can do is be as honest as I can. I think transparency is one of the most important things that a community manager can provide and give and deliver and ensure. So I am as transparent as I can be. I am incredibly positive about Adobe. They were wonderful to me for 2 years. I absolutely loved working with them and building their community here. And it's given me so many opportunities. It's helped me learn and grow as a community manager. And I now feel that, you know, it's just been an incredibly positive experience. I will never say a bad word about them ever. You know, I love them.
Well, I will. Those fools.
Should never let you go.
Feel free. Yes. You feel free. Yeah,
I'll be mad for you. Don't worry about it. So what is the strategy that you settled on after talking with Darren? Talk a little bit about, I guess we'll start on Twitter. How did you break it to the people that you had been building these relationships with? And how did you do it internally as well?
I needed to wait specifically until everything was settled on a, you know, an HR kind of legal point before anybody could be told that I was leaving, whether that was an internal person or an external, community leader. And so once it was very clear that my role was definitely going, then it was time to break the news. So I did some analysis first. I had to figure out the best time to break the news, right? Like, when are most of my Twitter followers or my most highly engaged people, when are they on Twitter? Who's going to see this? You know, what time is the best? You know, is it better at daybreak? Or, you know, I'm most prolific at kind of 8 to 9 in the morning. Is that the best time? Is it still too early because people won't be at work yet? You see what I mean? I had to think it through quite carefully. And once I did that sort of analysis, then I composed a tweet that I thought was clear, but not specific. I know that sounds really crazy, but...
Well, it was specific, but also vague.
Yes. As open and transparent as I can, you know, Christy Transparent Fedora, right? So, you know, I composed a tweet that was very much about looking to new horizons, looking for the next great community manager position that I can go and help build a new community for an organization. And then I used a hashtag that I made up myself because, of course, you can only track things on Twitter via hashtags. So I made up my own hashtag GoChristy, which is kind of ridiculous, but at the same time, fit within my 140 character set.
I'll allow it.
And then I put it out there. And, you know, it's a weird time of year right now. Obviously, a lot of people, as you said at the beginning, are on holiday or away right now, especially in Europe, where most of my community leaders are. So I still can't be sure that many of them know, but I've done the best I can. Now, on an internal basis, my team has drafted a communication that's going out to all of our NDA community leaders across Europe, Middle East, and Africa to let them know that I have left the company and that this is their communication points going forward. So here's the, you know, the team distribution list email, and that's what you should use. And also, you know, we've pointed to a couple of evangelists that reside in Europe who can answer any specific questions about products. Not that our community leaders tend to come with me with product questions. You know, I don't get any questions about Photoshop. They know that I'm not a Photoshop expert. But it was just one more point of contact for them to have, because obviously losing an asset, and I'll refer to myself in that weird way, losing an asset, your single point of contact, the person who knows that, you know, your dog's name is Buster, you know, that's kind of strange. I feel in many ways like I've gotten divorced when I didn't want to get divorced, which is a weird, weird place to be. But at the same time, business is business, and you can't be, although I was emotionally invested, I think I've learned a few lessons about how to maybe not get so emotionally invested in the future.
Well, I think it's also a key thing to remember. Like, sure, most of your contacts were because of your professional role, but if you've done your job well, and I think you have, a lot of those people, like you said, you know their dog's name is Buster, and they know things about you. You're going to be able to transition those relationships. The next place you go in community management, you're still going to be able to talk to these people.
Yeah.
So it's not goodbye forever.
No, exactly.
So speaking of great community managers, Christy, we've got an article of the business2community.com site talking about secrets to great community managers. Now, some of these aren't so secret for a lot of you out there, but some of them might be. So I thought while I had Christy here, it would be a good opportunity to go down this list and talk a little bit about some of the things that they're suggesting really go into making a terrific community manager. The number one thing they say is be strategic. Great online communities are strategic. And I would have to agree with this one. You can't just have an online community that's it's like sort of tacked on to your business strategy. If you're going to run a community and actually have it be effective, be a good return, you've got to make it, if not central, then a key pillar of your business strategy and your marketing and your outreach and your human resource and your customer relationship. It's involved in all these things, and it can't just be bolted on as an afterthought.
Yes, I would wholeheartedly agree with that. I think that one of my favorite sayings that I've come up with is, you know, a community is not just for Christmas, right? You can't just decide one morning you're going to have one and then engage with them and play with that puppy for a couple of months and then, I'm kind of tired of them now. I don't really want this anymore. Well, you will experience some pretty negative backlashing if you don't have a good plan in place to keep them, to not only engage them, but to keep them engaged. And I think the biggest question that people don't really understand, they think it's like a puppy for Christmas. Oh, we just need a community. We need a community. Well, why? What are you going to do with them once you get them? What do you want them to do for you? How do you want them to do it? What infrastructure do you have to support them? What policies and procedures are you going to make? And then let's not forget the importance of the fact that community goes across multiple layers of the business. So executives, they've got to buy into this and they've got to understand how it's different from customer reference programs. It's got to go from sales and marketing, right? Let's help find those people, or let's market to them, or let's do special things for them. Marketing has to buy into that and agree to that, because that's a burden. That's a burden on their budget and a burden on their time and their management. It's got to come from customer support. How can we treat our special customers a little bit differently than everybody else? And is customer support willing again to accept that? So I think it goes across multiple layers of the business, which a lot of people fail to realize.
It's definitely cross cutting, and if you can tell in a lot of cases when that that cross functionality is not there, right? So yeah. if you're in a community and there's no advantages, or you're not getting any recognition from customer support, and there's no, I mean, you feel it, you can tell, it's readily apparent, because all the other online communities that people are used to by now have incorporated that in some way, right? So it's the lack of it is felt by your users.
Yes, exactly. And I think that they'll know if your heart's not in it. They'll know and they'll leave you. And they'll not only will they leave you, but they'll tell at least three friends how crap you are.
Yep.
So it's quite easy to be good to them, but you've got to have that strategy. And let's also not forget the importance of that content management. So what content are you going to be feeding them? And I think that in many cases, content is king. That has been a saying for the past 30 years. I promise you, 30 years we've been saying content is king, and people still don't get it. So it's incredibly important to make sure you've got something to keep feeding them, right? You've got to feed them good, you know, give them their vegetables of great content. And then the meat, they'll provide that meat because they'll help you spread it out. They'll help you spread that word around. And it's just, you know, it's everybody wins that way, but they've got to have that information in order to want to be in your community. They've got to have some reason to be there. And that strategy is key.
Mm-hmm. Secret two, great online communities develop a 90-day plan every 90 days. I'm terrible at this. I don't know about you. But the idea that you should build a 90-day plan, and when that 90-day plan is build another 90-day plan, it's covering things like member acquisition, content, member outreach, What's your experience with this, Christy? Do you do this practice?
Well, my team and I knew our content calendar was very robust. We had a robust content calendar. So we would know, for example, that in 60 days time, we were going to have these three product releases and we needed to train up. We needed to brief and to train our community leaders on those releases. So we knew where we were going. But what I tried to do as well is do some internal analysis. So, you know, look, who's really engaged? How engaged are they? What are they putting out? Where are they coming from? Who are they talking to? So that for me sort of became the 90-day plan, right? So first we need to do a little bit of random sampling, and then we could do a larger survey, and then we can actually put some of the things that we find out in the survey into practice. We can actually change our policies and procedures and the things that we're doing with our community based on the information that they've told us that we're not so good at, or the things that they're stagnating on, right? So I think it's quite easy to have a 90-day plan if you know your community well, and or if you just ask them. A lot of people are afraid, I think, to ask the community what they think, when in fact they're your best planners. They'll tell you, look, you know, this sucks. I don't like it. What are you going to do about it? Well, you know what? Gosh, we can fix that. That would be perfect. Let's do that. And then, you know, you're not just trying to fix it all by yourself either. Usually, because the community has said, this is not good and we're not happy with it, it's easier for you to get buy-in from your internal stakeholders to help you fix that problem. So, although it is very much like writing a term paper, Greg, none of us like doing that. I think that if you just simply know your community and know what you can do to be helping them more, asking them, and putting a plan in place to deliver that, that's a whole year of activity right there. You don't have to have a 90-day plan. You can have a year-long plan of, I'm just going to make things better for them. Well, make it better in what way? Well, let's think about communication first. That's a whole quarter right there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Then let's think about outreach. Okay, well, that's another quarter. Well, let's think about acquiring new members. Well, that's another quarter. And let's think about infrastructure. That's another quarter. There you go, Greg. I've just done it for you. You're welcome.
Thank you. Now, I'm a big fan of talking to the community, finding out what they want. I mean, there has to be a balance, right? You have to finish the business plan, right? You have to pursue the company's interests. But also, you want to understand what your members are looking for, and if at all possible, where those two things can tie in. And you can't figure that out if you don't have the other half of the equation. I think Community Geek could do a better job of reaching out to people that are already in and trying to find out more about what they want to do or what they're looking for. Something that I'm trying to work on, and something that I hope we'll see improvement on in the near future. Number three, people come for the content and stay for the community.
So true.
Yeah, very true. When you put content out, it's like an invitation to join, almost. You're putting this out, especially on social media, right? Or any kind of feed or content aggregator. You're saying, hey, this article, it's got something that you might be interested in. If they're interested in it, they click it. If they like it, if they really like it, they're going to want to know where they can get more of it. And talk about it and exchange their ideas and feedback on it. And it's that second half that brings them into the community. And once they're there, they start forming relationships, they will stay there.
Exactly. It's the old, it's been around for a couple of millennia. It's called church. Churches did it first, you know. It's about, you know, they come because they want to be closer to their religion, closer to their deity, and they stay because they met a really lovely lady in church who sat next to them in the pew, right? And that's what it's all about. We're going to have a church supper, and we're going to have, you know, we're having a cake sale. And, you know, again, we're constantly as human beings looking for community, and church is a great place to find it. But again, you're coming for a reason that's personal to you. You're coming for your own personal reason, but it turns out you're staying for the interaction that you're getting. It turns out to be so much more of a bigger gift than you're looking for at the beginning.
To borrow a phrase from George Carlin, if only we had their numbers.
Exactly.
I tap something very primal there, and I think that's one of the reasons that it's endured so long. Those communities, I know a lot of people that don't even consider themselves very religious anymore, but they still do it because they want to see those people and feel like they're a part of the neighborhood or part of the community. And that's a really powerful motivator, even more than the salvation of their eternal soul, as it turns out.
What people will do for a slice of cake, you know.
Well, I mean,
easy peasy.
Let's be real. There's this church around my way. It's got some of the best cupcakes. I would sit in a pew for an hour for one of those. Let's be
real.
You see,
it's very clever. But you know, it is all about content. It's about what you're delivering to them. It's about the research that you do. It's about they can't find it anywhere else, right? They can't find that's the key. You've got to be giving something that they can't get anywhere else. Otherwise, they're not going to hang out and be in your playground. So it's very simplistic, but getting the right content that keeps them engaged is hard work. And any community manager, any social media manager, any content manager will tell you that.
Number 4, when online communities become great, members take control. This is something I've been really pushing on Community Geek, trying to get more members involved in some of the higher level things. Like, I've been working with Jurgen on doing resources. We've got Jessica Malnick and Kristen. They're coming in here. They're trying to help with the news, put out more content pieces. It's important to get your members to be the leaders you know they are, right? There's always a social hierarchy. There's always people who are really passionate and want to do more. You've got to be willing and able to provide that to them. A, for no other reason than your pure self-interest, it really helps up the content level of your community. And it helps you build relationships even more. And it helps you become more influential because you're working through these community leaders. And B, they want it. They're begging for it, right? If they're passionate about the community, if they see themselves as a leader, they see themselves as something to contribute, all you have to do is say yes. Here's how you do that.
Yeah. Yeah. If you build it, they will come, right?
Exactly.
Well, I think that what we recognized in our community at Adobe is that we did have those, you know, those top X number of people who did everything or who did a lot, who did so much, who were always visible. But what I try to do specifically is give my Europeans, my Middle Easterners, and my Africans more of a voice, because I just think I have some fantastic community leaders here in these regions, and they don't get a chance to shine very much because maybe time zones are challenging, or maybe they feel a little bit intimidated because every time they dial into an online event that we're providing, all the voices are American, even my own voice is American. So I think that they might have been a little bit intimidated by that. So one of the things I can do, because I know them so well, is I can reach out to them. So, you know, I know that this guy is doing this fantastic video production. He's doing all the big cycle races. Cycling is so huge everywhere in the world right now. And I was like, man, you've got to come on and you've got to tell people what you're doing. You've got to share it with us. He said, oh no, I'm not a speaker. I can't do it. I said, of course you can. That's my job. I'm going to help you do that. I'm going to help you deliver this, but you are going to knock their socks off. And he did. He was, you know, people want that encouragement. They want to hear that you think what they're doing is valued, and they want to hear that you already have a system in place. So all they have to do is step in. They don't have to build it with you. They just step in. And also they love to share. People love to talk about what their projects are. They might not like talking about themselves, especially my British folks, but they really like talking about their projects. And let's not underestimate the power of building up your own clout, building up your own network of people saying, oh, you know, that guy, he's all the way over there in London and he's doing this fantastic thing. Who, what else is going on in London? Right? So now suddenly there's more interest. There's interest in him. And I think that it's always good to have a more balanced cultural interaction for everybody to see.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of my favorite aspects about online communities. I've said this on the podcast a couple times, but that international dynamic, the ability to break down those cultural barriers, that's what really drew me to online communities in the first place. So that's a really important issue for me. Finally, great online communities demonstrate tangible value over time. Basically, ROI. It's got to pay. It's got to have some kind of value to the business, or there is no point. Community for the sake of community is not going to cut it in the modern internet.
That's right. I know that you're probably looking for me to say something incredibly useful right now, but all I'm going to say is yep.
Yep. I mean, we've been over it a couple times on the podcast, and it's not going to go away. If you don't have a kind of business model, or you don't have the ability to show where this community is saving money or increasing sales leads or increasing customer retention, or it's subscription based and it's paying for itself or will pay for itself with this plan that you've got, then you're in trouble.
Yeah. And, you know, it was quite interesting in my role with Adobe, because I was aligned to marketing. And I would go to these two-day marketing meetings where they're standing up and every single thing they do is measured. And they actually have a phrase for it. It's called marketing by the numbers. And if it's not going to pan out, they do a lot of analysis before they do anything. And if it's not going to pan out the way they wanted to, they scrap the project. They won't go forward. And so then, you know, I would stand up and say, hey, you know, my folks would really enjoy if you just gave them a special invite to come to that event. Well, why? Well, because they like being close to us. They, you know, they're our intimate family and they're our special family. And we need to, you know, it's not like fourth cousins twice removed. These are our first cousins. they need to be in the front pew of the church. And well, what are they going to do for us if they're there? I said, well, first of all, it's going to give them an enormous sense of happiness and well-being that they're part of our family and they're included in these types of things. And secondly, they're going to go out and tell other people about that. They're going to talk about how great the Adobe event was. They're going to talk about how great, you know, everything went beautifully because we put on gorgeous events. And then other people are going to want to come. Oh, well, how many more people? Well, I'm not sure. Let's do some analysis. Let's look at their social influence. Let's look at their clout scores. Let's look at their, you know, so use some social media analysis tools. Luckily, being Adobe, we have a few of those.
Mm.
And then
comes
let's
in
figure,
handy.
Let's try and do some forecasting. Let's give it a try, you know. And then they'd say to me later, well, you know, it's a good thing you sat in that meeting for 2 days. Otherwise, we never would have done this. Yeah. You're welcome. And so it's so simple. You give and you get. And ROI is all about showing what you get, but you got to give to get there. And that's the harder bit, because companies think, well, I don't really want to invest in this. Well, then you shouldn't have community. You've got customers. That's different. Customers are different than community. And a lot of people don't understand that.
Absolutely. And I think it's something else touching on what you said, that special invite, it doesn't always have to be like a massive sink of money. Sometimes you can get a lot out of a little. Just saying, hey, when you come, we'll have like a special area for you, or priority seating, or just reach out to them with a special mail. Say, hey, I know that you'd be really interested in this, and tailor a marketing thing specifically to them. These parts of our event would be so valuable to you, and here's why. It might take you a little extra time to put that together, but it's not hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know. Yeah. And the likelihood that that's going to get that person to go is going to be very increased, and they're going to be happy. They're going to be tweeting about it, writing about it, referring other people to it. If they switch roles and, you know, take over a management team at another company, they may send the whole team to your next event.
Yeah. And I think as well, you know, they're the whole reason that they're in your community is that they want to be closer to you. They're opting in to hanging out with you. So, you know, but again, it doesn't have to be a big investment. I mean, one of the things that always got me the greatest traction, and I don't want you to think that this is a very, it's a very, you know, harsh way of looking at it, because it's a very simplistic thing and it means the world to people. I would write a handwritten note. Thank you so much for coming last night. It was really great to see you. So glad you could come. Or I just get marketing to give me the registration list before the event. And then I can go through and I can look and see which of my community leaders are going to be there. And then I would reach out to all, let's say 10 of them. And I'd say, hey guys, come half an hour early and meet me at the pub. I'm going to take you all for a drink beforehand. You know, that's such a tiny thing to do. But again, it encourages community. It encourages networking. They get to know each other. They get to hear what projects they're working on. Suddenly these two guys are going off to do something together, to make a project. And then they're going to come back and tell other community leaders about it. So it's a very simplistic thing. And sometimes the tiniest little things, and again, that recognition, give them a special button to wear, a different colored lanyard, or let them sit in a special section at your event, or, you know, let them use your company logo on their website or their own personal sites. Those tiny little things mean so much to them, and they cost you very, very little.
It's important to remember that goodwill is a currency.
Yes. Yes. Unfortunately, again, harder to measure.
Harder to measure, but talk to companies that are in crisis or facing major scandals, and then ask them how valuable the goodwill of their customers is. Chances are they're going to say it's probably worth nearly their entire business, because it's about the only thing that saves those companies.
Excellent point.
All righty. Well, that's it for us. I want to give some shout outs to our members here. We had some new people join the community over the past week. Kristen Gastaldo, Martin Omander, and Ray Eisenberg. Welcome, all of you. I look forward to getting to know each of you as time goes by, and I hope to see you posting some more. Kristen's already writing some great news articles, and those should be coming out probably next month. Yes, next month. So look forward to those. And that's it for us, guys. Have a great week.